Fed can just print more money out of thin air, but the government's always going to be in debt to the Fed. Always.
Questions that aren't being answered.
All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dangerous World Podcast. As always, you've got Ryan and Brandon here. Brought on a very special guest this evening just to talk a little bit about the Middle East, as he will be going there. This is Cody with the Army. He's an air traffic controller, going to be going out there doing some important work in the spicy desert, as he calls it, man. I find that kind of interesting, dude. So how are you doing this evening, Cody?
I'm good, brother. I'm doing very well. I've just been cleaning the house all day. So nothing too exciting. This is probably the highlight of my day.
Right, dude. Well, getting to relax, man. I mean, like, I find it, my thing is, like, I want to get into the mindset of an individual that, you know, you have a nice life here in the U.S. and then now you're about to go somewhere else where I'm assuming you don't feel comfortable, as comfortable as you would in your own home. But, I mean, so what is the deal, man? Like, how do you feel about just, being told to go out into this area where I don't know, I'm very interested to know how you feel about U.S. occupation in the Middle East and all this good stuff. But I mean, what are your thoughts about the whole thing, man?
So, I mean, going over there, I obviously have my own political ideals of, non-interventionism. But, you know, yeah, all in all, I'm actually really excited, mostly just to go and see something I haven't seen before, go and do something I haven't done before. And that's the most exciting thing for me. And, you know, like I said before, I'm an air traffic controller with the Army. It's not like I'm going to be going over there, you know, kicking in doors and, you know, doing my thing. Like, I'm going to be out there and just, you know, being an air traffic controller, and I get to go to new land, new places, and meet new people. That's the most exciting thing for me. Other than that, like I said, I have my own moral compass as to if we should be in the Middle East or not, but no, we can go down that one a little bit more later on.
Yeah, dude. So, like, you're excited to go out there. That you mentioned why you are, but why? What is a couple reasons or any reasons at all of why you don't think that intervention is needed out in that area?
So it's mostly everybody. I'm sure everybody has seen that meme, the one where we've been in Afghanistan for this long, and then it shows the picture of Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake and a denim top and denim pants, and then it shows a flip phone and. You know, we've been in Afghanistan for a very long time, and we've been in Iraq for even longer. And honestly, I think it's turning in. I think the public perception of occupation in the Middle East is kind of turning the public perception of Vietnam. You know, where it's like people are starting to question as to why we're there in the first place. And you know, like we said in our last videos, you know, I don't think that Trump walks on water, but he did. Him and Obama actually too. We're starting to pull people out of those locations, and I think that's the better idea. Kind of getting into Joe Biden's recent action of bombing Syria, I don't agree that we should be there. I don't think we should be there at all anymore. And with Joe Biden, when he had bombed Syria, there was a reason why he did it, and I guess in a foreign policy point of view, I can agree with it. And that's going to ruffle some feathers right there.
Well, why is that? I know Brandon had something to say right now, but why would you agree with bombing Syria? And I'm not disagreeing or agreeing. I'm just curious as to your perspective here.
So kind of getting into the region just a little bit. A couple weeks ago, there was a missile strike in Erbil in northern Iraq, which is up in Kurdistan. And it was actually done by a Shia militia group. Now, the Shia militias are a different section of the Muslim extremists, and the Shia are backed by Iran, and they go into Iran to get funding, weapons, and training, and all that. Then they pass, they essentially passage through northern Iraq through Kurdistan into Syria. So the when the missile strike in Erbil happened, they were done by Shia militias. And then they, as soon as they struck, they went to Syria. And that's why we had to bomb Syria. So it sounds funny to say we got attacked in Iraq, so we had to bomb Syria. But that's the reason why, is because that entire region, you have a lot of maneuvers of these militia groups and local nationals that bounce from country to country. And so that's essentially, in short, the reason why we hit Syria, is because the Shia militia groups that attacked Erbil were funded by Iran and went to Syria.
One of the things, Cody, that I find a lot of people who talk about this subject doing is simplifying these issues to really short problems, like oil, for instance. You know, just saying all the Middle East is for oil. But if I could get you to boil down one a major crux in the reason why, you know, maybe why it's why we've been in there for so long, because there's a whole bunch of checkpoints at which people fault the American foreign policy for making mistakes like this, or intentionally doing what they're doing right now, however you see it. One is that we shouldn't have gone into a whole bunch of these places in the first place. We sort of kicked off the Arab Spring after 9/11. I don't think it's just America who did that, obviously. There is the not understand. There's the idea that we just didn't understand what kind of inter-religious conflicts were there and just ready for us to pull the top off with Sunni and Shia going at each other. And then obviously Saudi Arabia backing the Sunnis. And then, as you mentioned, Iran backing the Shias. And then the other one is just that we have another fault that a lot of people say the American foreign policy has in it, is that we just like making money so much doing this. And that's why we stay so long. All of those, I give a little differing amount of credence to. What's the main crux though, for you, as to, if you could sum up, let's pick Syria, since we're here. We did talk a little bit about not defending, but understanding where Assad is coming from, how, what's her name from the, who ran for president in 2016, Tulsi. Yeah, Tulsi, how she got in some hot water for her kind of closeness to Assad. So let's pick in Syria. What's the crux of the mistake there in American national foreign policy? Excuse me.
Yeah. So how you said the people oversimplify by saying oil, I'm going to oversimplify it in another direction. And this is probably the more other reason why we're there. It's not all because of oil.
Right.
Oil is the financial reason why we're there and why we're in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, and all those other little countries. But the main reason why we're still in the Middle East is because of Israel. We are the roadblock between them and every other country who wants to kill them. Again, that's very oversimplifying it. That to actually kind of expand on it a little bit more, you have to realize that Islam is 600 years younger than Christianity or Judaism. And Judaism is obviously older than Christianity. So right now, you have to put in perspective that Islam is kind of going through their dark ages when it comes to religion. While we already went through ours with the separation of the Catholics and the Protestants, and then the Protestants and the Catholics had their wars between each other. Now you have the separation within the Muslim community with the Shia and the Sunni, and then you have the Wahhabi, and then you have the Kurds up north, which are actually a regional difference, racial difference than they are religion difference. But it's what makes it so volatile is that they might be going through their dark ages, but now they're going through the dark ages in a time where everybody else has the technological advances to be able to exploit that situation.
So that's a good simplification, and it's exactly what I asked you to do. So that's great. What about on the other end? I want to see just how differently you can interpret some of these fights. So Kuwait, the first Gulf War, a lot of people have different ideas about just what it stood for, in the same way that people look at every single war. You know, it's not always just about one thing. How about an idea like this? Kuwait, Saddam Hussein in fighting, quote unquote, for Kuwait, for control of it,
right,
was fighting back against British imperialism. And as such, for people who really, I think, I don't know how you feel about it, but for someone who does value someone's, the world's ability to govern themselves on a national basis, just independently. I'm not saying I would have been rooting for him to fight back against British imperialism. But what about, you know, the lib side, that's a strain of anti-conflict thought that conservatives and the neocons were pushing back against hardcore. So can you see any, how about in the Gulf War, in that instance, in that framing, where Kuwait is backed by Saddam Hussein, is fighting to give this country its independence, and also, fighting to give its country independence. What do you think of that narrative?
So the British control over the Middle East has been happening since World War One. Since the fall of the Ottoman Empire after World War One, the British were the only ones who had the ability to take control of that region because they had control of the Suez Canal. When they took control of the Middle East, an oversimplification, very in short, but they're saying, we don't want to take care of this, so we're going to draw a bunch of lines in the sand and call them countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they introduced the idea of states, right? Because states and nations are a Western creation, as strange as it seems. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because at the time, the Ottoman Empire was separated by regions of religion and nationalities. And they all came together under the Ottoman Empire when they came in as countries. So setting aside Kuwait for a moment, Iraq, for example, should be three individual countries. You have the Arab Sunnis in the southwest. You have the Arab Shia in the southeast. And then you have the Kurdish Sunni up north. And then, of course, you have a bunch of different others, but those are the big three. When it comes down to Kuwait, when the English were there, think of Kuwait as kind of a Singapore of the Middle East.
Okay. How so?
Either Singapore or Hong Kong. When the British had taken control of the region, they had found massive amounts of oil. And so the East India Trading Company had kind of taken control of that region. And so the British military kind of guarded the Kuwaiti royal family to maintain control of that region. And so the Kuwaiti royal family essentially had the money and had an agreement with the British. When the British left the region, I forgot the year, but it was around the time of World War One, World War Two. When the British left the region, Kuwait essentially became its own country, its own empire. Because I don't know, not
still,
empire.
Still financially tied to the British Empire, but it remains any kind of semblance of state that we can hope for in the Middle East at that time, exactly. For sure. Yeah.
And so I can understand where you're coming from when it comes to Saddam trying to release Kuwait from the British ties. But the Kuwaitis don't want to be relieved of those ties. When we went in the Gulf War, ever since then, the Kuwaitis have been paying us to stay there so that the Kuwaitis don't have to have a strong standing military to defend themselves. So that's why we're still in Kuwait, and we use Kuwait as a jumping ground to get from location to location within the Middle East. We are essentially there as a contracted military force with the United States, NATO and the Kuwaitis, and they pay us to stay there.
Well, one, yeah, One more question I have just about your perspective here, Cody. So you mentioned that the way I think you put it was Iraq should be split up into three ethnic religious groups. Is that the prime thing? Is that I won't call it a utopia, but is that a goal to reach for because it's the best we can do right now? Is it a goal because that is that? Because that you are okay and understanding of states basing themselves off of ethnic religious differences? Or is that just because statehood, you know, nationality in the Middle East just is such a foreign import? Which one of those would you agree with most?
It's kind of an all three, really. And the problem with, and here's the other issue with the Middle East too, is that when it comes to Iraq, if you do split it up into three, now that leaves northern Iraq as Kurdistan. Now the problem with the Kurds is that their region is between northern Iraq, northwestern Iran. I forgot what countries are north of that, and then of course northeastern Syria and portions of Turkey and Jordan and Armenia and all that. So the Kurdish region expands across all those regions. So if you create Kurdistan as its own country, now you're going to essentially have to deal with the other regional issues within other countries there as well. But that kind of, I guess, so solved the problem with Iraq. But you can't really have the statehood ideas with that region, because they're all mostly religious-based governments. And you have other countries that also are religious-based governments. Now they say, hey, now that Iraq got, like, let's say Saudi Arabia, for example, Iraq got split into three countries. Now we're going to absorb southwestern Iraq, which is mostly Arab Sunni. We're going to absorb them, and the majority of the people there are going to be okay with it. Mm-hmm. Because now, okay, well, we're
fine.
We're with the Saudis.
It's like Crimea with Russia back in 2012 or whatever it was. Yeah.
Exactly.
We belong to them. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up Russia right now, Brandon, because that's what I was trying to say just a second ago, was that the United States has this kind of history of helping out what ends up being 20, 30, 40 years later, their enemies, right? Like with the Mujahideen, mm-hmm. we talk about in our episode with Josh Monday, we were talking a little bit about how the Mujahideen were fighting against the Soviets, but this was the Cold War era. So it's like, okay, well, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So we need to get in here. We need to help these guys out. They're hanging out in this mosque in Brooklyn, you know, kind of being radicalized by all accounts. And, you know, it comes back to bite us in a way, right? So mm-hmm. I just find this whole dynamic very interesting, man. And then, you know, how you're saying that, yeah, you know, I signed up for a job. I'm absolutely 100% willing to go out and do my thing. Mm-hmm. But you have mixed feelings about going and why the military as a whole is out there. And I can't agree more with that, dude. You know, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth here, but that's just kind of how I took what you're saying.
And that's exactly it. You know, it's like like you said, you know, I'm an adult. I'm a man. I'm going to say, I said I'm going to do this. So I'm going to do it. But at the same time, my morals are saying, you know, I don't really think we should really be there much more.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's funny you brought up the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. The Afghanistan region is wild. So yeah. The reason why setting up a democratic government in Afghanistan is so hard isn't because people don't want it. It's because that it's a completely tribal region. So the tribes only care. So imagine like United States. The tribes there are small towns here. Sure. So let's say in Arizona, for example, you try to say in Arizona, we're going to set up the Arizona Republic. Now you have Prescott saying, well, I don't care about the Arizona Republic. I only care about Prescott. You have Flagstaff saying, I only care about Flagstaff. Mm. And now Payson and Page. And for example, so that's going on, so on and so forth. And that's exactly what it is in Afghanistan. Like the tribes over there don't care about a bigger government. They only care about what's in their tribe. They only care about what their tribal leaders have to say. When the elders say something, they take that as law. And so You can have a democratically elected government in Afghanistan, and they say, hey, everybody, you have to, you know, wash your hands every 5 minutes. Like, this is obviously a stupid example, but let's say that's a thing. The tribal leaders say, no, we're going to have everybody wash their hands every 10 minutes. And yeah. Then now the people of those tribes are going to do it every 10 minutes because they don't care about what the federal government of Afghanistan says. And on top of that, you also have more racial issues in Afghanistan as well. So this was a curveball when I first learned about this too, is that there's a big group of people in Afghanistan called the Khans. When Genghis Khan had invaded the Middle East, obviously Genghis Khan had been known to be one of the men with the most wives in history.
Yep.
Well, there's a very, very big region of Afghanistan where everybody's last name is Khan. They're all descendants of Genghis Khan.
Wow.
And they only care about what other Khans say. You can be a Khan from Kandahar, you can be a Khan from Kabul, or you can be a Khan from up north. And they only care about what each other say because they're essentially racially profiled by other Afghans in Afghanistan.
So it's like a little mafia in a sense, right? Or like you said, a tribe. And, Italy, speaking of mafia, the Italians, they're very regional too. You know, mm-hmm. They have more regional pride. Like if you live in Calabria or Sicily or Puglia or wherever else, you have more pride being from that area mm-hmm. than you do being an Italian. You know what I mean?
Right.
They all battle it out for who's got the best food and who is the most efficient and whatever.
Yeah.
And it, to me, that might be a goofy example, but I feel like that is exactly what they're doing. And I can't say that I disagree with just following the people that you feel comfortable following. You know what I mean? Like everyone's giving Trump so much crap about being about America first. It's kind of what these people are over there doing. But the same people that are you know, going against Trump are like, well, let these people do what they want at the same time. So it's just this conundrum, this like mental gymnastics that we see from both sides. It just, to me, it's fascinating. Go ahead,
Brandon. Yeah. Is the breakdown of the reliance on those tribal bonds, is that something to be hoped for in your in your mind, Cody? I mean, I just wonder if you think we should be, because I in the end, I think that the West does hold the moral high ground on a majority of issues when compared to. When you're comparing the Eastern world to the Western world, do you see a place for us putting better efforts than we have in the past, but putting efforts towards shaking that part of the world loose of the idea that, hey, man, it doesn't need to be tribes. In fact, if you connect yourself to a wider demographic of people, then you will end up, you know, altruism pays off in that way. Is that something to be hoped for in your mind? Considering that, let's just say if we could do it right, yeah. Is that something that you would want?
I guess if we could do it right without more foreign national and American blood being spilled, I guess, yeah. But in the end, we all know that that's not how it would happen. And this is the hippie in me talking. You know, the California me, but saying, you know, live and let be, man. Like, we can be over here hanging out with our big screen TVs and our capitalism and, you know, everything that we sit there and hold true to American society, you know, the Second Amendment, the Constitution, and all that, all the this, that, and the other. While they can be over there in their tribes and living life and hanging out with, you know, their imams who are sitting there saying, you know, preaching the Quran.
Dude.
Like, live and let be, man. Like, I don't.
What you're saying right there, Cody, is it's 100% true, man, because like so many people aren't going to get behind a war effort unless we're attacked on our own continental United States or Hawaii mm-hmm. or Alaska or whatever. After 9/11, after those attacks, there wasn't one person, whether it be a kid, a liberal, a Democrat, an old man or old woman, whatever. Everyone was all about going over there and getting the people that did this. You know what I mean? Yeah. And whether you believe it was Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Afghanistan, U.S. government, whoever you think it was, okay, we were told and we reacted in an emotional, like so quick, like a visceral reaction to what happened. We're like, okay, we're told it was these guys. Let's go get them. There was like, you know, there's that cliche thing where like, I never want another 9/11, but I'd do anything for another 9/12. You know what I mean? Like
everyone was
on the same page as far as going and invading. And you'll never have that unless we have some sort of epic crisis like what happened that day. And I would never want that. Right. I don't think anyone in their right mind would, but
what's funny, like you said, in the other podcast,
I
said in the other podcast where, when Ronald Reagan said that humanity will never come together unless, you know, there was aliens.
Yeah.
And well, what's funny is now that the actual support for the wars in the Middle East are kind of dying down, people are starting to question why we're there. And now you're starting to see Americans turning on each other again.
Yeah.
Because now the interest in being over there by the American population is like, well, why are we there? You know, it's their fault. It's their fault. So now everybody's pointing fingers and attacking each other. And of course, again, it's just oversimplifying issues in the United States. But we're essentially kind of at each other's throats here because there's not a lot of interest elsewhere.
Sure. Well, and that's exactly right, man. Like, so yeah, I don't think that we are at risk of being attacked by anyone. You know, a lot of people that tune into this podcast, they know my stance on the whole 9/11 thing that went down. You know, but I don't feel like anything like that could be pulled off because the country's so freaking divided. Even if it was some nefarious, you know, deeds that were done, you know, by the deep state or whatever. And this is Ryan talking here. This is me just putting like what I'm saying. This is not, you know, speaking for Cody or Brandon. No. If it was the deep state of the United States carrying out these attacks, they wouldn't want to do that because we are at our throats so much, man. You know what I mean? Like, why would they want to unite the country if they're trying to get us into this universal basic income? Why would they want to take us to the point where we're like, okay, hey, you know what? My liberal friend, I get it. I don't agree with you at all, but there's a bigger enemy out there. You're not the biggest threat to me right now.
Right.
So let's settle that big threat and then let's come together. And then maybe, you know, 10, 20 years from now, then we'll hate each other again. But for right now, let's just be friends and let's go and get the real bad guys. So right. I just find that really interesting, man.
Why attack your enemy when they're attacking themselves?
Yeah. So is that implying then that the next terrorist event that occurs is not going to be of the deep state? I don't know if that's a low blow or a gotcha, but like would it line up with your guys' ideas then if some, you know, if the One World Center comes down in a few weeks, does this rule out just that mm-hmm. there's any nefarious stuff going on by the deep state?
Honestly, man, like I'm starting to wonder if the next incident that's going to happen is going to be deep state or not. You know, I'm definitely a big deep state believer, but I'm starting to wonder if it's going to be some other entity.
Sure.
You know, an entity that's like kind of, excuse my French, but kind of getting tired of everybody's shit.
Hey, no. Man, you know the podcast. We don't care about anything that you say, man. You can let it all out here.
Ryan does hate the French, though. But
well, dude, I don't hate the French at all. But there is, you know, speaking of the French, it's not just the United States, man. When there's like an epic terrorist attack, whether it be in like Brazil or not Brazil, in Britain, you know, the subway bombings that happened there, everyone's rocking the British flag back in the MySpace days. And then when the Paris stuff happened, everyone's like, we stand behind France. And then people all around the world were saying like our hearts and our thoughts and prayers go out to Las Vegas during that Las Vegas shooting. Mm-hmm. So when there's these tragic attacks on these soft targets, the world unites around that. You know what I mean? So like kind of getting back to like what Reagan was saying, if some otherworldly enemy came over and like, you know, vaporized an entire country or whatever, yeah, we would all hopefully rise together. But it's the same concept, dude. And with the deep state, I mean, the deep state, you know, people say that they don't believe in it. it's pretty much undeniable. All that the deep state is they're unelected officials. You know what I mean? They're unelected officials that are very rich, very wealthy, lobbyists, things like this, that control a lot of what the sitting presidents or sitting leaders, politicians that are, you know, kept and held in high regard to a lot of people. You know, seeing the way that Biden, in my opinion, has flip-flopped on what he started out as and then where he is now, I don't think he believes in a lot of the things that he's signing in. But, you know, third time's the charm as far as running for president. And so this dude's in now. He's got to play ball. You know what I mean? He can't, you know, and again, I know, you know, this is a sketchy thing to say here, talking about this kind of topic. This is me saying this. You know what I mean? I just find that it's fascinating when people are going to say, no, Biden is doing all, he's thinking on his own. He's doing all this stuff by himself. Same thing with Trump. You know, Trump, he was in someone's pocket. Everyone said, like, no, he wasn't serving anyone else. He was serving the American people, and he was doing what he thought was right. You don't think, why do you think he had Jared Kushner and his daughter working in the government with no political experience? You know, yeah, maybe Jared Kushner got some things done as far as like peace deals in the Middle East, which are quickly going to unravel very, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
I find it interesting when we get behind these people and we almost put these people up to levels where they're gods, you know, like when a 90-year-old politician dies, we're like, wow, I can't believe he died. You know what I mean? It's so weird. It's like, no, he was 90 and he had two heart transplants. He died. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
exactly. Well, like this thing with Tiger Woods.
There's always a puppet master. Everybody has a boss. I don't care who you are. You could be.
Yeah, dude.
You could be the Queen of England. You can have a boss. Yeah. Everybody has a boss.
Absolutely.
The one thing that's hard for me to wrap my head around, especially when it comes to the conspiratorial stuff, is when people say, oh, the one world government's almost here. Here's the one reality check that I have for myself. And again, kind of walking back in the Middle East portion. How can you have a one world government when the Afghans won't even recognize their own democratically elected government? How can you have a one world government when the Americans are constantly, constantly questioning reality?
I think it's a slow burn. Go ahead, Brennan.
And then the idea is also that like people got to get finances. I mean, I know a good portion of the Middle East still does not. Still does not charge usury for a whole bunch of things, but does not commit usury, but they still like have to. When America goes into these countries that are just now building up, like they'll finance the building of things like universities, you know, mm-hmm. in big cities, and that makes like the farmer's kid out in the middle of Afghanistan. Since all of his friends are going into the city, are going maybe to university, they're leaving behind like farm jobs, you know, and now even though the father of that kid will be left without a worker, those positions, you can see how that you would be a bad parent for letting your kid go along. So I won't deny that there are ways to still hook them in, even if they don't call themselves, even if they don't call themselves like beholden to this higher power. We're kind of dealing with the same thing in like Texas here to a lesser extent, right? They are one of the people who are like ethnically and geographically seriously proud. And yet they still have these ties to they still use a shit ton of the deep state to run, you know, they still are funded by that.
That Texas is ethnically proud. You know what I mean? I don't know what you mean by that, but it's not like Texas people are like, we're proud there's white people here and that's it. You know what I mean? Like,
I would ask.
I think you meant like nationally proud, because Texas views themselves as their own government.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. But ethnically, to me, doesn't make sense.
I would think we could find some interviews with some Texans. I'm not saying it's representative of all of Texas, but that's the same with the Middle East. Like, you're not talking about all of the Middle East being racist or ethnist.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I was watching Family Guy earlier, And one of the things he said was, Peter went down to Texas, and he's like, well, you guys let a retarded guy hold a gun. This place is awesome. They're like, you're what, son? And they put him up to the electric chair. He's like, wait, can we just talk? He's like, talking's for gays and blacks. You're retarded. We just execute you.
Dude, yes. No, and that's the whole thing, though, because we know how liberal Seth MacFarlane is and that whole writing staff, Hollywood as a whole, you know what I mean? So it is like there has been a hit out on Texas as far as like, you know, if the government, if the federal government could put economic sanctions on Texas, they would absolutely do it. You know what I mean? It's just a little tough for them to do it. They're pretty self-sustaining there. They have their own gold vaults in Texas.
Abbott just repealed all of the mask mandates and opened all businesses too. So, man, they don't give a fuck down there. Like, everybody's worried about
that's a beautiful thing, man.
Yeah.
Florida's been doing storm. Well, what's that? Everybody get rid of their masks.
Yeah. Well, Cody. Yeah, Cody.
It's not. Do you think these people over there in the Middle East are wearing masks? You know what I mean?
Absolutely not. Maybe the women because they have burqas and shawls, but.
So, they're right, not that's scared of this stuff.
I can guarantee you they don't give a shit about COVID.
Bringing it back to the other side of the world here, Cody. What my last little, because I love getting into service members' minds, especially ones who toy with conspiracy theory ideas. So with what we have today, all the pieces where they are exactly are they are. You can't change anything before you make this decision. What do we do in Syria, man? Are we getting behind Assad and just recognizing that we just can't have a rebellion in there? Or we do we go full force saying, hey, the rebels, they are another representation of the Arab Spring. And even though we screwed up a lot of that, we still have examples like Tunisia. Someone would be crazy to think that Syria will look like Tunisia in the next 20 years, because Tunisia is one of the ones that worked out after in the Arab Spring. So what do we do, man? You going with Tulsi? You going with the ex with the deceased John McCain there? What are you doing over there? If you're king for a couple years here,
if I was king for a
good
day,
point,
I would let nature take its course, man.
So pull out and Assad like whoops their ass, right? Like that's probably I think that's what nature is, yeah.
Yeah, like if that's how if that's how that region handles it and Assad whoops the rebellion's ass, okay. Does it affect us? Why are we over there?
You would say no, that it doesn't affect us.
Right. Why, like, again, kind of branching back over to Vietnam, does the communist takeover of Vietnam affect us at all? More than likely not.
Not at all, because the second largest, the second largest economy is a communist powerhouse. It affects us a little bit, but Vietnam is not nearly the size of that. Yeah. And it seems like there's just been this, you know, dick measuring contest of capitalism versus communism since, who knows how long it's really been going on.
And, I'm a huge fan of, open the markets, free market. Free market libertarian, and like obviously I'm against corporatism. I don't like the corporations, but I'm all about the free market. So I guess that's a little bit of a
laissez-faire. Right, yeah, laissez-faire. Just let it be. Hakuna Matata, right? So what about Ryan brought up one way in which that kind of thing going on in Vietnam can affect us. What about just the migrant crisis? I'm wondering how legitimately, because that's another piece of the puzzle we have to solve here. There's just Aleppo being, or already has been, torn apart, right? So is that just something that we are here to deal with? Do we not even get on that? Do we shun them from our borders?
Yeah. See, and again, kind of just trying to stay true to the plain view. Let's say everything that's being shown on TV is 100% fact, rather than kind of going down the conspiratorial mindset. The migrant crisis, honestly, just handle it how we have been. I know our system isn't perfect, especially when it comes to immigration. But if you want in this country, then you got to go through the process for it. And like, I understand you're going through, I understand you're from a war-torn country, but we can't accept the entire country of Syria into our country just because you're refugees. I, as shitty as that is to say as a human, like, I'm sorry. It just, would you allow your entire apartment complex to live in your apartment just because half of it burned down?
Nope.
I know, again, it sounds nationalistic and it sounds douchey to say, but I mean, when it comes to put it down to a reality check, we don't have the resources in this country to uphold every war-torn nation in this world.
No, it's not even a rude thing at all in any sort of way at all to say, Cody, because, like, you know, the, and I'm not trying to make this too political here, but like when, you know, the left has been saying that Donald Trump's wall against the southern border is you know, it's oppressive and it's rude and it's all this mean stuff, orange man's mean. But then what happens as soon as Biden gets into office, they put a wall around the Capitol building, a wall around DC. And then Nancy Pelosi has walls around her house. She's got her own little private security force. Why is that okay for these people to do it when we don't want to have guns? We don't want to have walls on our borders to protect ourselves. We're worshiping China right now. China's got something called the Great Wall. You know what I mean? Which, yeah, that was built in a different time. But it's just like there's such a double standard when it comes to, you know, what America, what's best for America, and then what's best for everyone else. We need to put last, and then everyone else is before us. It's that whole cliche of like, if the plane's going down, you put your air mask on before you put your child's on. You care about your child more than yourself, but you can't help your child unless you have your own mask on. You know what I mean? This is not the COVID mask I'm talking about, but you know, it's the same kind of concept where it's like, dude, what are we talking about here? Why are we not just thinking about this from a strictly common sense point of view instead of trying to be so freaking politically correct, man? It's getting to the point where it's going, you know, my dad used to say that religion was the worst thing for this world, right? Religion is what we fight wars, blah, blah, blah. And then social media came out and he said, social media is going to bring down this world. And now what he says is political correctness. You know what I mean? Political correctness is a freaking cancer on this society, man. And we seem to be the only ones here in the United States that really hold it above common sense.
So I actually had a kind of revelation the other day. The reason why we're so beholden to political correctness and solving the more what we could consider now minor issues, because, you know, what's funny is one side says, oh, we have to defend the rights of this group, or we have to defend the rights of that group, and everybody has to be equal. And then the other side says, well, look at the other countries. Look how bad they are. Why don't we focus on them first? And it's like we've gotten to the point in this country that I don't like using this word. I don't. But we've gotten to this point to we are so privileged that we have to go down like a different rabbit hole of small issues that are now seem to be big issues when in reality they're still very, very minute. Like in Qatar, for example, if you get caught, no, sorry, not Qatar, in the UAE or Saudi Arabia, if you go to a hotel with a woman who's not your wife, she gets hung.
Interesting.
That's why I went to Dubai, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. And, like you have countries that still view that kind of stuff. And we're over here saying that children should have trans rights because we're in a position in history where we don't have any real big issues anymore. So now we're nitpicking at the smaller issues when it comes to social justice, saying everybody has to have rights. And now we're kind of making it into this big deal when in reality, like there's still places in this world that, you know, gays get thrown off buildings. Or blacks are still, or sorry, not necessarily blacks, but Africans are still put into slavery. Like in the Middle East, again, there's an African slave trade.
There's a Christian slave trade too. Go ahead, Brandon.
And how though do you square that with, I'm not trying to nail you down here. I really am curious about your perspective. So how then do you square all of that badness in the world? Well, I guess do you square that all that badness in the world still with the fuck all if we can do anything about it, you know?
Yeah, well, the way I look at it is I'm always torn between let nature take its course and, you know, being live and let be versus we have to, you know, help the underdog. But I think to help the underdog is the American.
Is the what? I'm sorry.
The American.
Gotcha. All right.
That's the American in all of us is wanting to help people that are less fortunate. But then, like, then again, you know, go and ask homeless people if they care about pronouns. You know what I mean? Even here in the United States, they don't.
No.
You know, it's these rich people that really have nothing. You cannot hurt these people at the top. And so what they're going to do is they're going to try and change your language, right? They're going to try and say the things that you can and can't say.
That's
the biggest issue with authority, man. And it's like, especially when it comes to government, it's like, yeah, these people up in their marble palaces who are trying to talk down to us and tell us how to live and tell us how to accept people and accept this and accept that. Yet they haven't even gone grocery shopping for the last 12 years.
I think
tell you that you don't need, sorry, go ahead, Brandon.
I think it is important to plant a flag there and say though that with 1 in 4 trans youth being homeless, I think they have a little bit of something to say about the usage of pronouns. Sorry to cut you off there, Ryan.
Yeah, the 0.00001% of homeless people that are trans, I get you. Yeah, definitely. I mean, if we're gonna start, you know, worrying about all these like super niche, like micro groups of people, then yeah, we're not going to get anything done. I mean, you might as well not leave your house because that might offend someone. If you walk out of your house, you know, stepping with your right foot out front, because you know, a lot of people are left-handed, you know, a lot more people are right-handed, you start writing with your right hand,
it's not that we should change our lives based on it, but you started off by saying no one who's homeless cares about that. I'm just saying, yes, there are some people. Now, what we do about that, that's on a micro scale of, and when we're talking about a national issue here, but a whole bunch of the value systems, the competing value systems work their way out because, like you said, Ryan, it is such a small percentage of the American population that is that falls into these LGBTQ plus A7 #? Categories here, and it is then up to us individually to then trade off. Well, we have the underdog of the underdogs there, people who are fucked in life. They got the shit end of the gene and societal stick handed to them. And we don't have to expend all of our energy going there. At the same time, we might not want to expend any energy. At the same time, a lot of people think if you don't expend any energy there at all, since we have the power, maybe they think to change things, that we should. And that's, so again, that's just a microcosm of the bigger issue that we're talking about. And I think that the way that those run parallel to each other, when we're talking about all kinds of issues on this show, is that you can see people's values line up that way. One last question I had for you, Cody, is there a particular way you like to square your, like in one sentence, square your, being a part of the military, because part of it is just a job, right? And I will say that for me, it was, this is a good way for me to get out of Craig, Colorado, where I grew up from. Is there any portion of your service that you're looking back on saying like, hey, you know, I know that I was one of the foot soldiers to the evil henchmen of the deep state, but I also have a job.
Yeah, well, so I'm an air traffic controller now, but a couple of years ago, I'd say 6 years ago now, I think, it was in 2015 when I had gotten out of active duty. I was a scout. I was reconnaissance. I was 19 Delta, and at the time, it was a love hate relationship because I loved being a scout. You know, I loved being in the Bradley, and I loved rolling around and acting like I was king of the battlefield because you're in armor. And that's kind of when the whole thing kind of happened, because we got sent to Europe in 2014 for Combined Resolve. And this is when Russia was invading Crimea. And don't get me wrong, they called it a deployment. It was a vacation. Got to go to Germany, dude. Like, that was fantastic. But, you know, they're sitting there saying, oh, we got to stop the Russians from invading Crimea. And then we have to help essentially be a show of force. I'm like, what are we going to do? We're a small company of, you know, Bradley is in armored reconnaissance. What are we going to do against the Russians?
Yeah.
Yeah, speed bump. Yeah, that's what I want to do. Thanks.
No kidding.
And that's when I kind of got out and I decided to go National Guard and change my gig to air traffic control. And honestly, that's probably the best move I've ever done.
Oh, that's interesting, man. You know, like when you say it like that, Cody, it makes it seem like you played that game Stratego.
Yeah.
It seems like that's like what these freaking, you know, like rich, uber rich people do with the military. It's like, you know, they put this small force in this area and in your words, make it a speed bump for the Russians if they did want to go and invade.
Yeah.
Like it's a chess game, it seems. And it, you know, hearing it from someone, right, you know, someone that was on the front lines of something like that, it just kind of like, you know, kind of hammers that idea home. Obviously, a strong military is needed, right? For number one powerhouse in the world, the United States, we need a strong military. And this makes
absolutely. And like Teddy Roosevelt, like
Canada,
speaks softly and carry a big stick. Like a strong military is needed. And like to have that show of force is necessary. Yeah. But like, there's also the part of me of like, why do I give a shit about Crimea? Why do I give a shit about Ukraine? Why do I give a shit about what Russia's doing when I'm worried about what's going on at home? You know, there's I feel like the pride is kind of leaving a lot of people, like the American pride, like, oh, we're badasses, you know, back to back world war, you know.
Camps. Yeah. You feel a little, you feel a little like cynicism creeping in, Cody, as you, I know that would, it coincided with me just growing up too. Cause I turned 18 in boot camp, but don't you feel some like national sense of cynicism creeping in where we don't,
yes,
value? Yeah. Yeah. And is that something, is that a good thing?
Yes and no. I think in a way where people are starting to realize that, you know, a lot of what we do military wise, foreign policy wise, internal policy wise, I think a lot of the things that are happening is bullshit. But at the same time, I think it is kind of a bad thing. Again, this is where I'm split into, especially when it comes to the idea of a need to know basis. Like there's a lot of stuff that actually happens in the world that American people probably have no idea what's going on, and they probably should never know what's going on, even though I'm 100% on, you know, with the whole transparency thing, because people would probably lose their minds if they realize what's really going on. But I think there should be a sense of patriotism, and yeah, I want to serve my country, but I think that the waking up to the BS that's being fed to us is also important.
Good point.
Like I said, I'm right there, split in the middle. Now, I think every time I think of the military, I always think of, because I'm a big music fan. I've always listened to System of a Down and their song BYOB, you know.
Why?
That's like what they always send the bombs.
Bring your own bomb. Bring your own bomb. No, so what do you think about, real quick, Cody, like, this way how they glamorize the military, like at you know, pro football events, you know, commercials, you get like this, you know, scrappy looking dude, and then he jumps in, he gets to put on this great Marine suit, and everyone is like, you know, he goes from being this loser to this hero, and everyone is just like worshiping this guy in the commercials, that is, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that is some sort of like sinister indoctrination? Or is there something else going on there?
A fetishization of the military, and it's a nasty, nasty fucking thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think that there is a fetishization of the military, if I said that right. I've been drinking a little bit today.
You deserve it. You deserve it.
Have you guys seen the most recent, you know, Go Army commercial, the one where people are trying to be recruited? And it's like, it looks like this mix between an anime style. No, it's not anime style animation, but it's like anime style, like, you know, powers where they're sitting there, like putting their hands in the sky and this big beam of light goes up. And it's like super obnoxious. Like it's the most cringeworthy commercial I've ever seen. And then there was another one where it was like a total video game, and it's all propaganda, you know, trying to make the military look cool. And I think that the fetishization of the military does take its toll because, you know, here's a good example. When I was going with the basic training as for being a scout, right? You know, everybody was there. It was essentially like, yeah, let's go kill something. Yeah, I want to kill something. And I understand, especially when it comes to combat arms mentality, that's what they want to drill into your head, that they want you to go out and kill something. They want you to be that mindless drone that wants to go kill something that is quote unquote not human like you are.
Well, this is why they take young kids right out of high school. They target them, right? Because they don't have the same thought process. Like if you send a 30-year-old man into a hot battle scene, you know, they may have some thoughts. If they're like, hey, go out there and do this, that, you know, they might be a little apprehensive versus like a hot to trot 18-year-old man that's ready to rock shit. You know what I mean? So yeah, I definitely agree with you, man.
Yeah. It's frustrating because I was one of those kids at one point where I was like, yeah, let's go to Iraq. Let's go to Afghanistan. Let's go kill some Hajj, you know? And all of a sudden, like, I get a little older and I get a little more mature and I'm like, hey, these guys if I start looking at it from their perspective, not sympathizing, but kind of empathizing, understanding what they're doing. Like if we were Afghanistan and the United States was invading us, I'd be I'd be fucking doing the exact same thing they're doing. I wouldn't want a foreign country coming in here into my village and telling me what to do.
Definitely, no. Dude. I don't know if you've ever heard Dakota Meyer talk on podcasts, but Dakota Meyer
I've heard the name, but I've never heard his podcast before.
What's that?
I've heard the name Dakota Meyer, but I've never actually heard his podcast before.
You ought to check him out. He got what's the highest ranking, the highest Medal of Valor?
Medal of Honor.
What's that?
Medal of Honor is the highest award you can give.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry, this goes to show how much I know about this stuff. Yeah, so this guy is a Medal of Honor recipient. He got it just for basically saving his entire group or doing what he could. You know, basically all of his best friends died that day and medal for it. And he was just sitting there talking about how he literally got a medal for the worst day of his life. And he hates that medal. You know what I mean? He's grateful and he's honored to have it. But at the same time, he hates that medal because every time he sees it, he's reminded about the worst day of his life. And so it is kind of that fetishization of that whole thing where it's like, dude, like what, you know, and again, man, I feel weird talking about this stuff just because it is something that I appreciate so much when people go out and they risk their own neck so that we can complain about gender politics and all this other stuff over here.
Yeah. Right? And you know, like what's funny is here's the thing though. It's like as many issues as I have with it, like I signed a contract. I'm sticking to it. I gave my word saying I'll do it. So I'm going to do it. You know, I might have my issues with why we're over there, but there's one thing I hate worse is people who go AWOL or people who, I guess, yeah, just AWOL in general, people who leave their posts.
The burdens of the world?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like even if I was in the shittiest location in the world and I didn't want to be there, I didn't agree with being there, I said I would do it, so I'm there. And essentially, at that moment, I'm there for my homies. I'm there for my buddies. And, like, it sounds cliche, it sounds tacky, but, like, that's exactly what it ends up being. Like, whether you're in the field or you're on deployment or you're getting shot at or you're just hanging out in the barracks one weekend and one of your homies gets one of your homies gets a little too spiced up and jumps off the third floor balcony thinking he's doing vampires. Real story, too, over in Fort Hood. one of my guys, we're on the third floor. He's on the set. We're on the third floor. On the second floor, there was a party going on, and there's a bunch of civilian dudes down there. He goes down to bum a cigarette off some guy, grabs the wrong cigarette. That cigarette was laced up with bath salts. He was yoked out of his mind on bath salts on the third floor balcony, and he thinks that all of his buddies are vampires. He tries to jump off the third floor balcony, and it's like it's stuff like that. You know, it's like. You're in the shittiest position, but you're in it with your buddies. And that's why you push through it all.
Spice was fucking motherfuckers up when I was in there, man. That shit will tear the ranks up, dude. I saw an entire boats, like entire portions of boats leave just because one guy started smoking it, and then the other guy, and they couldn't test for it for a long time, and it was available everywhere. That's a motherfucker, man.
Well, that's comforting knowing people with messing around with nukes are all spiced up like that, dude.
Your asshole would pucker if I told you what kind of people are poking around with what is it, Little Boy and Big Ben or something like that, whatever the nuke names were. Yeah, dude.
Well, it's funny. I had one of my soldiers. This is when I became I was a corporal, and he comes up and he's like, "Hey, corporal, I just want to let you know I've been doing cocaine." And I'm like, "Why did you fucking tell me, dude? God damn, now I gotta say something." And then I go and tell my first line. He's like, "Well, why'd you tell me?" I'm like, "Because he told me. And if he gets in trouble, so do I."
That chain of command, man. That's so interesting, man. It's the biggest regret of mine is not signing up. You know, biggest regret. But I mean, I don't know, Cody. I don't know what else to say other than, you know, just thank you for going out there and signing up and doing your thing, man. I know you don't like when anyone is gonna, you know, thank you for what you do, but I mean, dude, you know, without people like you doing what you do, we wouldn't be able to be here and do this podcast. We wouldn't be able to have our day jobs. Like, no one listening to this would be able to have the same life if it wasn't for you and a bunch of people like you that were brave enough to go out and do what you're doing, man. So I thank you. You know, Brandon spent some time in the service as well. So I mean, anyone that has signed up, you know, this episode's for all of you guys, more so than you know, for people like me that didn't sign up. But I mean, you know, I wish you nothing but luck. I hope you make some great memories out there, man. And I very, very much look forward to talking with you when you get back. If you're able to ever chat when you're out there as well, feel free, dude, because, you know, like, you know, I got to have some drinks with you a little while back, and that was a nice time, dude, just getting to kind of like throw a couple back and just hang out. And
absolutely, man. When I get back, we're definitely gonna have to get some more drinks. We're gonna have to get Brandon up there too, because that was a good time.
Absolutely, man. There, so man, let us know, dude, if we can do anything for you. I don't know if you want to plug any social media or just tell anyone else what you're up to other than you know, your next big journey in life right here. But I mean, this last couple minutes is all yours, man.
Yeah. My Instagram, the only social media I really have, besides Snapchat, and I hardly even use that. My Instagram is thebarber_48. So yeah, it's nothing special. It's nothing fun. It's just aviation and barber pictures. So if you're into that kind of stuff, then I guess I'm the Instagram for you.
Close cuts. Yeah. It's very niche.
It is
very niche. I like it.
So yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. It was definitely good kind of just rambling on and kind of going through a bunch of, cause I'm a big history nerd. I love history. So I'll just ramble on forever. So I'm glad you guys kind of dealt with me on that one.
Well, dude, you know, it's just it's a fun time just hearing, you know, people's life experiences and getting into this stuff. But again, can't thank you enough, Cody. Brandon, do you have any closing thoughts here?
No, man. Stay cool out there, bro.
All right, bro. Appreciate it.
All right, Cody. Best of luck to you guys. And thank you all for tuning into another episode. We will see you in just a couple of days.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.